Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'ahotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always really, really just joyed, overjoyed maybe, to be able to bring you our live broadcast weekly. And certainly to share with you information and inspiration that hopefully will lead to greater liberation. Before we begin tonight's program, as usual, okay, greetings. It seems like we're having a few technical difficulties tonight, but as we often tell you, sometimes that happens, and when it does, we usually are able to get back on within a few minutes. So in the event that we do have some more technical difficulties tonight, we again advise you that there's a possibility that that could happen. I'm not sure if it's because we had quite a few rainstorms or whatever in the past couple of days, but at any rate, we've been having a little bit of technical difficulties, but again, usually we're able to get back on within a matter of a few minutes. At any rate, we want to again greet you to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation and remind you that, of course, we are broadcasting live. And a few moments ago, we were getting ready to open up, as we usually do, with giving thanks and praises to our Creator, and always, of course, being very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. So we always want to get that in before we start our show off. And, of course, tonight we're going to have some relatively live dialogue. And when I say live, I mean, well, tonight's show really would not be kind of geared to what you might call the family audience, meaning, you know, this will not be a show for the little ones. We're going to talk about a couple of topics that people tend to skirt away from, and so we're going to get into that dialogue a little later on. But also tonight, we're going to talk to a brother who is going to share with us some updates on the situation, the case of Marissa Alexander. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Marissa Alexander, this is the sister who is now serving a prison term that it has been indicated it could be 20 years for the idea of holding your ground, standing your ground. Remember that? Remember, of course, George Zimmerman used that when he murdered Trayvon Martin and would have gotten away if people had not stood up and really let it be known that they were not going to allow this to happen and that it would not be swept underneath the carpet. And initially, of course, George Zimmerman was, in fact, walking the street, doing whatever, wasn't booked or anything. And he's only really incarcerated now because they're saying he perjured himself, not so much because he actually killed Trayvon Martin, you know, but because he perjured himself. But the bottom line is, Marissa Alexander also took a position, did not harm anyone in doing so, but as a result has been indicted, is now serving 20 years in Florida, the same state that George Zimmerman is in and, of course, that Trayvon Martin was killed. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to have Brother Lincoln Alexander joining us very shortly to give us an update on the event that's going to be happening tomorrow, and also to provide some insight into how we can get involved in helping to get this sister out. You know, here at New Day Resurrection Liberation, we have made it very clear that our position in the violation of all our women and girls is something that is in the front and foremost of our plan and in our work. And so, needless to say, the situation with Marissa Alexander is one of those situations that warrants our participation and certainly to do whatever possible that we can do to assist. Let's see. Before we go to that live line to talk with Brother Lincoln, we want to also let you know that tonight we're going to continue our dialogue about an upcoming event that will be taking place June the 29th through July the 1st. And that is, of course, the Pan-African Grassroots Conference that is being hosted by the Olutunji Village in South Carolina. We're going to talk very soon with the Oba of all of the Yoruba people in North America. And we're going to be talking with the brother Oba as well as the sister Iya, who was on last week. And we're going to go more into what's coming up for this Pan-African Conference, which we hope all of you will, if you can't not participate, that you will support in some kind of way and certainly help to spread the word about what is going to be going on. But also, we're going to talk about some specific topics tonight that will be discussed at the conference, and also some topics, again, that we've been kind of hearing throughout our communities for a while and haven't really heard some real concrete dialogue about it. We've taken the opportunity tonight to do that, at least to begin that process. And the dialogue that we're talking about is really two areas that we're going to focus on tonight, in addition to some other things, but we're going to focus on the area of homosexuality in traditional African religion and in Black people religion, period. Okay, we're going to begin to have some real candid dialogue about that, because what we're finding is that there has been a lot of confusing information that has been circulating, and we want to try to begin to get better clarity and better insight into some of what we're hearing and some of what we're seeing, and hopefully that will allow all of us to have a better a comprehension and ability to address this issue a bit more productively. We're going to also talk about nation building, community and nation building today in the 21st century. For some reason, some of these concepts and notions have gotten a little lost over the past 10 years or so. There used to be a real focus, a real thrive for community and certainly something called nation building. Well, nowadays it seems that people don't want to even hear it or discuss it. It seems that the idea of corporate America has become such a priority for most, to become so much a part of the system, that the idea of being independent, the idea of having our own nation, not just communities, but nations in this day and age, I'm sure you all can agree that's what we need to really be talking about, is the development of nations, the development of societies. We've now got to take it to that next level. So we're going to talk more about that tonight. And how can we now make this happen expeditiously, more sustainably, and so forth and so on? We're going to dialogue about that tonight. And, of course, we're going to, of course, talk about, now this weekend, in Cobra, is holding its national conference here in Philadelphia. I think this may be the 23rd year for NCOBRA, and certainly we want to talk a little bit about that, but more so about reparations, because that too is something that seems to be a great debate lately. And so we again want to see how we can bring this idea, this concept, this struggle, whatever you care to call it, how we're going to bring it forward. Because while some feel that, oh, you know, we shouldn't be trying to get anything from these people in terms of reparations and this and that, well, what about remedies? So we're going to talk about that and begin again to bring this into a greater scope of not only an international reality, but also how we can begin to bring about a form of healing through the process of restitution and real remedies. So with that said, again, we're going to be going to our live line shortly, but before we do, I want to share a couple of thoughts with you. Needless to say, being in good old America, for lack of a better word. There's a lot going on. And again, when we think about the case of Sister Marissa Alexander, we can't help but to notice that there is some kind of an imbalance. Of course, many of us have always known that, but we've been able to, you know, see it from the time we were brought here. And for those who are already here, well, you were abused too. So let's not get confused. Whether you were brought here as a way of being kidnapped or whether you were already here, you were still violated. So, again, we need to really kind of, you know, understand the reality of who and what the enemy really is. With that said, there has been, over the years, I think, some very profound statements and kinds of things being said through lyrics. And while, of course, some of the hip-hop today is, like, really not worth the time or effort, there have been some, of course, that has been right on point. Now, what we want to do tonight is just share a little bit of that with you. This being Black Music Month, I want to kind of point out a couple of things. For example, how, in fact, there was somewhat of a transition from old school or, shall we say, rock and roll or soul music or whatever. I want to show you a little bit of a transition that did, in fact, occur as it began to manifest in hip-hop. And while, of course, like most things that happen with us as a people that ends up that start out being, you know, something positive or something that was really beneficial for us, usually as time goes on, it gets co-opted and whitewashed, and then you know what happens from there. But the bottom line is there's some real roots in some of this, and you know, we have to sometimes look at the whole picture. So with that said, I just want to take a few moments to share with you a couple of lyrics, a couple of kind of, you know, spoken word to music, as one might say, and we're going to show you the transition from one point to another from a musical standpoint. But for the moment, we want you to let us know what you think about this particular tune. For those who might not know of this particular artist, well, let's see if we can bring it up and see if you can identify who it is. But certainly the words.
Pulling into the fabric, they can't stand us, even in white, we're proceeding. down full of dynamite with her covering it. Let her sit on the chin and tell her whole fellow and y'all don't speak women shit. She be there by herself in the Bible, believe that she the reason the sinners here. You played her with an apron like Brittany, my dinner kid. She the nigga here. Ain't me in the free will. That shit'll be a chase. Two young boys and girls, barbaric. I'm in a double bar castle. Bugging how I made it out the hood castle. I'm probably really for third world charity. With an empire soul, imagine how crazy that would be.
Is not what you think it is. Needless to say, relatively profound, I would think, but, and certainly right to the point. I'm certain that many of you already are pretty aware of some of what this brother was saying, but the fact of the matter is sometimes we have to, I won't say be reminded, but sometimes we have to just kind of hear it again just so that we are continuously on point, continuously focusing on dealing with the actual struggle of obtaining real justice, real freedom. With that said, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And again, we're going to talk about a case, a situation that is in our midst presently. You know, again, it's kind of interesting that when it comes to our women and girls, when it comes to our women and girls being raped, murdered, molested, and so forth, for some reason, it, you know, the buzz on it or the interest in it or whatever seems to kind of be a little cloudy or a little vague or what have you. Well, we have to really try a lot harder, and we're certainly committed to do so here at New Day Resurrection Liberation. We have to make certain that, again, the imbalance that we see in our community begins to dissipate somewhat. And so we know that those of you who are listening certainly feel, you know, probably very similar and are doing things about it. Well, we have in our midst a situation, and the situation is we have a sister who is a mother, a sister, someone who has experienced on an ongoing basis being violated, and in this particular situation, one who had experienced being, you know, brutalized, beaten by a mate or by a significant other, as some say. As a result, began to put forth some kind of resistance, and in that, no one was harmed, but to be very blunt about it, apparently this sister who had a weapon that was licensed, shot up in the air in order to scare her offender off. The bottom line is this sister was ultimately arrested and is now incarcerated. She has been indicted, and from what we have been told, is facing 20 years. This is ridiculous. I mean, you have cops who have killed people who are walking the street, getting paid, and we're now talking about a woman, a black woman at that, who had repeatedly been abused, and it's on record as such, and yet we're talking about her now doing 20 years. I mean, this is just unbelievable and certainly not something that we can or should tolerate. So what we're going to do is go to our live line, and joining us tonight is Brother Lincoln Alexander, who is very serious and very committed in making certain that this situation is brought to the attention of as many people as possible, but certainly to encourage all of us to help, to support in the effort to bring justice for Marissa Alexander. So what we're going to do is go to our live line, and joining us right about now should be Brother Lincoln Alexander. And so we're going to talk about the case of Marissa Alexander. We want to let you know that we are going to open up the lines very shortly, so that if you have a question or a comment, you can certainly ask. We want to remind you that Brother Lincoln will be limited in talking specifically about certain areas because, you know, again, the case is still one that is being, I believe it's an appeal at this point, but certainly from what I was told, the lawyers have advised that, you know, there's certain areas that he just can't not go into, so we just wanted to make you aware of that and be respectful of that. But certainly we want to get as much information as we possibly can, and I know, you know, our listeners are the type of listeners who are very, very much involved in fighting and dealing with social justice issues. So we ask that you, of course, you know, listen carefully and, you know, again, get involved. So, again, we're going to go to our live line, and joining us should be Brother Lincoln Alexander. Brother Lincoln, are you on this line?
I am. Good evening.
Good evening to you, and thank you for taking the time to join us this evening.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be able to speak with listeners or be able to talk with people about this case, bring the awareness about what is happening in our own backyard.
Absolutely. Well, my brother, feel free to give us whatever information you are able to provide for us. We'd appreciate if you would kind of, you know, go, I won't say to the beginning, but I'm sure there are some listeners who have no familiarity about the case at all. So if you can just kind of give us a little briefing on some of that, then we'll move forward and go into the event for tomorrow and how people can get involved.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll start with just a high level. Marissa Alexander, she's a mother of three. She has a master's degree. She had a very good job. She was a manager at a payroll software company, a very good payroll software company at that. She had no criminal record, prior criminal record, before August 1st of 2010. She married a serial abuser. That's plain and simple, what he is, a serial abuser. Did she know this before she actually met him? No. Over a year and a half time frame, Marissa was beaten, and she endured multiple ways that serial abusers dominate their mate, whether it is physical, mental, you name it. She endured that over the year and a half time frame leading up to August 1st, 2010. I keep saying August 1st, 2010 because that was the date that she feared for her life and tried to defend herself.
Mm-hmm.
When she defended herself, she fired one warning shot, and that warning shot prevented further abuse from being done to her. No one was hurt, no one was injured, but yet she is serving a 20-year sentence at this time.
Mm-hmm.
She was convicted in March and sentenced in May. So she is serving her 20-year sentence. We have two kids together. My name, as you've already said, Lincoln Alexander, I'm her first husband. We have two kids together. Two of the kids, my kids, they live with me. Her third baby, which is from her current husband, she has not been able to see her baby since she was 8 months old. And that in itself is troubling, to where a judge will allow a serial abuser to take custody of the baby from her grandmother. The baby was living with Marissa's mom, but a judge allowed the serial abuser to take her away, and no one from Marissa's family or even the abuser's family has been able to see the baby.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So we have multiple issues going on with Marissa Alexander. For one, she was wrongfully convicted. Justice was not done for her. She is the true victim in this case.
Okay. Well, I mean, needless to say, while it's shocking in one sense, of course, it isn't in another. Wow, because as we said earlier, I mean, this is America, and we see these types of things all the time, especially when it comes to our people. I just want to also say to everyone that, you know, we have to begin to talk more about this issue of course, what many call domestic violence. But as you know, here at New Day, we talk about the whole idea of our women and girls being violated. And, of course, this particular area of being physically abused, mentally abused, and I dare say, you know, spiritually abused, we have to begin not only to talk more about this, but we've got to come up with how we're going to address some of this, because what you are now also hearing is not just a woman, a sister, being physically, mentally abused, but you're also hearing how the system now is able to maneuver this in such a way where they're able to get access to our children to a greater extent, to manipulate and maneuver our children, our families, the way they want them to be. And so we've got to see this bigger picture as of course, as the woman, this female, this sister being violated, but also see how the system is now being able to do some other things, not only to incarcerate our women, but also now, as we're saying, to get access to our children. And we're going to talk more about that a little later on as well. But, Brother Lincoln, please continue.
Okay. She was originally arrested for aggravated assault, and with that particular charge, the police did not put in the weapon charge. That was added at a later time by the state attorney's office. They have sole discretion over the charges that are pushed forward. So an aggravated assault charge would normally carry, she would probably have served a 1 year for that particular offense. When the prosecutor office stepped in, they immediately added the 20-year without looking at anything, any facts, that's why we are putting justice for Marissa. She has not received justice from the beginning. The deck that was dealt to her was unfair to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So we are seeking justice for her, because it just seems like they did not want to be fair to her or look at all of the factors of the case. And that's the reason why we have a very good lawyer from New York. His name is Mike Dow. He is a pioneer in domestic violence cases.
Mm-hmm.
He has taken this case on, and he is going to see this through to where Marissa is able to go home free.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
has been inequality of justice being served here in this particular district. And I say that because we have seen multiple cases that have not been fair across the board. I tell you that Marissa was originally arrested with just aggravated assault. We have seen other people that have the same type of charge with a deadly weapon. That's the charge that was later added, assault with a deadly weapon, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. But with the enhancement, that's what carries the 20 years. other people that have had that particular charge have gotten away with 1 year probation. So we look at it to ask the question, what makes Marissa's case so different than someone else? How is it that a white man can shoot up a house, multiple shots, he's outside of the house and shoot into a house and only get served 8 months in jail and 1 year probation, but you sentence Marissa, prosecute her for 20 years. There is no justice there. It's not fair. Absolutely. It's not equal. We have the documentation to back that up. And so it's not just rhetoric coming from our family to ask this particular question. We have other documented cases to where people have received 1 year or mm-hmm. a probation for the same type of charge, but you send Marissa away for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, we have to add again that Marissa had no priors, nothing of any type of violence or anything. And, again, no one was injured here, but yet 20 years. Now, here you had a situation with George Zimmerman who literally killed someone. And, again, we have to note that we're talking about also this so-called law of stand your ground. In Florida, that law exists. And if, in fact, people had not rose up, I dare say George Zimmerman would be walking the streets because initially he was not arrested. He, you know, went on his merry way. And it wasn't until people came together and began to rally and bring attention to the situation that anything went into effect that, you know, made certain that he was dealt with. So how could someone literally kill someone with the so-called stand your ground concept, walk the street, and really he's incarcerated now because what? Oh, they think he committed perjury. Not because he murdered someone, but because he committed perjury. So clearly there's something wrong with this picture. And again, you know, the power of the people has proven to be victorious in the past, and I dare say it certainly can be victorious today. Brother Lincoln, tell us about what's going on for tomorrow, and then we're going to go to our live line and hear some comments. We want to also remind everyone that the chat room is open. If you have some comments or questions you'd like to post there, please feel free to do so. But we're going to go to your calls after Brother Lincoln tells us a little bit about the event that's coming up for tomorrow.
All right. We have a freedom rally. We're doing a global day for Marissa Alexander and domestic violence. This is actually the first event. This is the kickoff event for a host of different events for legislation. Violence Against Women Act. There is legislation that is, there is a major event happening on Tuesday, but our event happening tomorrow here in Jacksonville, we are doing a freedom rally and motorcycle fundraiser here in Jacksonville. There are five other cities holding a rally as well, and I hope that Philadelphia is one as well. But our event, we're going to have a motorcycle ride starting at 1 o'clock, and the rally will start at 2 o'clock, and we have multiple speakers that's going to talk about Marissa and about domestic violence in our neighborhoods. So it's going to be a nice event tomorrow, and we have another event planned on July 13th with the NAACP, where Martin Luther King III will be our main speaker at that particular march and rally. So we have two different events planned right now. Tomorrow is one, and then another event with the NAACP on July 13th here in Jacksonville.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, what we're going to do is go to a caller, and caller, we would like for you to give your comment or question if you'd like for Brother Lincoln. But I want to also say this. I have a question for our listeners. I would really like to begin to hear, what are we going to do? And when I say we, many of our listeners are from the conscious, so-called conscious community. We have many who are from the traditional African community, from the Pan-Africanist community, from the nationalist community, you know, all different types of communities we are from. But usually when I hear certain types of actions when it comes to you know, various types of violation, be it civil rights and human rights, and certainly issues that are about our women, I don't hear actions coming from these segments of our people. I'd really like to know why. What's up with that? But before you answer that question, we're going to go to one of our lines and caller. You're at, let's see, 9358. Do you have a question or a comment for us tonight? Hold on. Let's bring you in. Okay, yeah, you're at 9358.
Okay, yes. First, I want to say greetings, Sister Filet. This is Brother Phil. And
hey, Brother Phil.
And good evening to your guests, Lincoln, Alexander.
Good evening.
And I'm glad to be a part of this dialogue because I do have questions concerning the case, and I might have a solution. Question number one pertaining to the case is that it seems like what happened in the house, because the husband got to the police first, and he told his story his way, it was a cut and dry case for everybody, and it seemed like the authorities just took it, and her testimony wasn't even considered. And it seems like it's happening, and Trayvon's case was the same thing, too. It was a reversal of authority where the authority covered up to make it look like it was a cut-and-dry case. And I know another brother here in Philadelphia where his daughter attacked him when he got drunk, and he was going to go upstairs and lay down. The daughter was mad at him for something else, and attacked him and beat him up and smacked him down. And when he came to, the priest was in the house, but because they gave their story first, he had to go to jail for disturbing the peace and all kind of other stupid crime things they attached to him. And his testimony wasn't even considered. It was just like the policemen were the judge, the retainers, the judge, and the sentencer, right then and there, the way they write the report up, writes your rights right out the window. And we need to make that point very, very strong in this case and all the other cases, because it's like a new thing that's happening with the Stand Your Ground law and the castle law. That's what they're using it as. And now we got Stop and Frisk, where that's unconstitutional. They can find anything on you and write it up to make it look like it's bad. But question two, let me see. The question two was, let me get it. I got it right here. I have to go in this other room.
While you're looking for it, Brother Sewell, let me just say this, that
yes.
Some of what you're saying, you know, I can agree, but still and yet, to be given 20 years for shooting a weapon, a gun, even with what you just said, still, I mean, regardless of what story was told or accepted or whatever, to be given 20 years for shooting a licensed gun,
that's how they use their authority. See, we have no authority. She don't even have authority to put her side of the story on the table. They just took it
if she did put her story on the table, even if that, in other words, the point being that regardless of whether the story was, she was telling the story or whatever, to be given a sentence of 20 years, regardless of what the situation was, to shoot a weapon and be given 20 years for it. So we have to really look at this whole thing and by point, but did you find your question?
Yeah, I got my question, and I feel you on that point. I do feel you on that point. And they get ridiculous and inhuman when it comes to us and the law. And that shows the bias and the unjustness of their rationale and thinking and their authority and using the law against us. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean about taking your authority from you. They are our servants, and they're using their authority to concoct some wild story to make it look good in the press, so they can go back to their good old boy club.
Right, no doubt. And since they've been doing this now for about 250 years, we kind of are aware that this is what they do. But now let's go to your question, and maybe you said you might have a solution.
Let me see. Yeah, all the cases has one thing in common. They've all been covered up by the police and authorities. Okay, the husband got to the police first, right, Lincoln?
Yes, he was the one that called the police first.
He called, and he was out there to meet them when they got there.
That's
correct. Okay, and see, that's why his story stood. Had the cops got there and examined what really happened, I mean, got both sides of the story, because if you look at the police report, her testimony is not even in there. So that means he called a cop, he lied, and he got over on the lie, and the authority came in not doing what they supposed to be doing, taking both sides of the testimony so that they can get so they can have a chance in court to defend themselves. And no, she's just cut and dry. She broke a law, bam, wham, bam, and out. That's it. No prior conviction, as Sister Fillet said. No mercy on the court. No compassion. No human signs of a human being whatsoever in their the way they adjudicate the law, and they do it because of who we are, because they know who we are. But I'm not going to get into that. But
Brother, so before we close out with you, do you have a solution or a proposed plan of action?
Well, the solution is in your heart. You already know the answer to that, and together, like it was back in the day, we didn't have to worry about things like this. And now that we all freelancing and free, or think we free in this society, we're scattered. And so they're plucking us out one by one, and they're having a field day at it. They can do this for the next 400 years. So we must come together. We must start dialoguing on the process of unification under these circumstances. And we must start dialoguing on it, because, see, we haven't even begun to start dialoguing on how we can put our differences to the side and start loving one another instead of hating one another. That's a big turnaround. So it's a spiritual thing, and that's why it must start with a dialogue to get all of our minds ready and prepared to think correctly so that we
all
can...
All right, my brother...
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, we're gonna go to another caller now. And I thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. And we hear you. All right.
Thank you for the time, too, Sister Fillet. Go ahead. I'll listen
welcome.
Up and I'll bust back
all
in
right.
and try to get out.
Okay. Great. Give thanks. Okay. Let's see. Let's go now. We're gonna take one more caller. Brother. Oh, no, let's see. Let's try caller at 0646. Did you have a question or a comment tonight? We're talking about the case of Marissa Alexander. Did you have a comment or a question in regards to this matter? 0646? Okay, I guess not. Okay, Brother Lincoln, could you please let us know, give us some email address, website, telephone number, what have you, so that folk can be able to, you know, stay in touch continuously to get updates, information?
All right. Thank you. We have our website, justice4marissa.com. That is justice4marissa, MARISSA.com. On our particular website, we post all of the updated information. Right now, you will see our poster for the rally tomorrow. And also on our website, which is very important, one of the ways that people can help us is making a donation for the defense fund.
Mm-hmm.
We have my contact information is also on the website as well.
Mm-hmm.
Writing to Marissa, which is also something that people can do to keep Marissa encouraged. She can hear from all of the supporters. We have her address and her number, DC number. They call it a DC number,
mm-hmm.
on the site as well. So all of the information, ways that people can help support us, is on our website.
Okay, wonderful. Well, my brother, I thank you so much for, you know, bringing this story and this information to our attention. And I want to make sure that you know that we are here every Saturday. We invite you and encourage you to, you know, just let us know if there's some updates or other information that you want to share. And even if it's not on Saturday, if we need to do a special edition of our program, we certainly are able to do that as well. So, you know, again, I want to extend an invitation to you to be able to, you know, come on whenever you may need to, okay?
All right. Thank you for having me.
You're certainly welcome. Now, one more time, please give out the website information.
That is justice4marissa.com.
Wonderful. Okay, so, once again, give out the mailing address for Marissa so that people can write. And let me just ask before you go, would it be helpful if folks sent letters to, the district attorney there or some other political person or any other people that can be contacted or should be contacted?
No, not at this time. We are allowing the lawyers to determine the best course of action. So I won't say that it would help if people would write letters to any particular person. The only person I would say that I would encourage people to write to is Marissa herself. She loves to write, so anybody that writes to her, you can expect a letter back from her. Her address is on our website, but I can verbally give it out. Marissa Alexander, and mm-hmm. next to her name, put DC and the number J46944. Her address is 11120 Northwest Gainesville Road, and that's in Ocala, Florida, 34482.
Okay, great. Yeah, because we have people who are listening in on their telephones, and that way they might not be able to access the web, so that way we're able to, you know, get that information for them as well. All right, my brother. Well, thank you again for, you know, coming on and sharing this information with us. And again, we extend an invitation to you to be able to, you know, come on at any time.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Peace to you. Okay, family, we're going to kind of take a little break, I think, and when we come back, we are going to be joined again by two representatives from the Oyutunji village. We're going to talk about the upcoming grassroots, Pan-African grassroots conference that's going to be coming up this weekend. But we're going to also be talking about a couple of other things tonight. And we said earlier, of course, that there are some topics in our community that we tend to avoid or really get clear insight about. And so tonight we're going to also talk about some of those things. And what we mean by that is the issue of homosexuality. Homosexuality is something that is in our community, of course, now. And we are also finding it in various religious circles. And as some may know, even in terms of some of our traditional religions. Now, recently I had the opportunity to be, of course, in Benin. And for those who do not know, well, in Benin it is illegal to be or engage in homosexuality. And, of course, this has become a problem for some because human rights advocates in different circles tend to say that this is a violation of human rights. So we would really like to know what you may think about that. Well, we're going to open up our live line very, very shortly. But before we do, we want to remind you again that the chat room is open. And let's see, before we do that, we want to also let you know that if you are online and you care to call in, you have a comment or a question for us tonight, then we certainly welcome you to do that. You can call us at area code 646-652-2232. Again, 646-652-2232. We want to also let you know that we are going to extend our program tonight. We usually go to 12 o'clock, but we are going to have our program extended again until 12:30. So we will be on for another hour as opposed to leaving at 12 o'clock. Okay, I think what we're going to do, rather than to go into a break right now, we are going to go ahead and proceed with our dialogue. So we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and let's see. I believe we have one of our representatives that looks, hope this is our line, at 7452. I'm not sure which one this is. This may be the Oba. If not, it will be Sister Ia. Let's see. Caller, you're at 7452. Are you one of our guests for tonight?
I am. Good evening. How are you?
Oh, good evening. How are you tonight, my sister?
I am informed. I your first part of your show is just like a total awakening, because I am one of those people that hadn't heard about that sister's case, and it's just, you know, amazing the level that the so-called justice system in America has gone to now. It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My sister, I want you to stay right there, because I think we may have the Oba on another line, and I'm going to try to patch that in right about now. Let's see. Okay, we're at, hopefully, caller 0646. Is this the Oba on this line?
Yes, good evening. Ekale.
Oh, greetings. Oba. Yes, wonderful. All right, we have both of you now. Very good. All right, well, first let me take this opportunity to welcome both of you to our radio program for tonight, New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Of course, the EI was on last week, so we welcome you as well, my brother.
Thank you very much. We're very happy to be here.
Okay, now, if you would be so kind to inform our listening audience a little bit about who you are and what it is that you represent.
Absolutely. Would you mind doing the honors for us, please?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have online with us this evening His Royal Majesty Oba Adejuyigbe Adefumi II, who is the traditional ruler of the Kingdom of Oyutunji in Sheldon, South Carolina. The Aba is also the second traditional African king in North America, or the head, the spiritual head, sovereign head of all Yoruba in North America. And so these are not self-appointed titles, but rather historic occasions to which the Aba is seated in the crown of Oyetunji. The founder of Oyetunji African Village, for the listeners that aren't familiar with North America's oldest authentic African village, was founded in 1970 by His Royal Highness Aba Adefumi I. And the Aba, His Royal Majesty that we have on line this evening, is the predecessor, is the successor to that crown. So we're excited that he's here. You know, while we could kind of pinch it last week, it's always our honor and certainly our privilege to hear the wisdom of the crown, and particularly on the occasion of the grassroots assembly that's coming up this weekend.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. And again, a little bit about you, my sister, for those who weren't listening last week. Please introduce yourself as well.
Adupwe, we are the Igbe Rohingya Day. Some may be familiar if they watch us on YouTube with Inside Oyetunji, which is a quarterly news magazine, entertainment magazine. And we host that show to keep people informed of all events that go on in the African cultural communities across the country, not exclusive to Oyetunji, even though it's inside Oyetunji. Oyetunji really is more than the 9 acres it's on. Oyetunji is a large family throughout the country, and international, really, throughout the world. And so we host that program. As well, we are then the press secretary to the Aba, and that is who we are.
Oh, wonderful.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir.
Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about the upcoming conference that's going to be happening starting June the 29th, I believe. What inspired this grassroots, this Pan-African grassroots conference? And again, I applaud you for convening this, because one of the things that we talked about last week is the importance of how in our traditional societies to connect the dots now with the idea of being Pan-African or nationalistically inclined, to begin to bring these things together so that we can, as the brother said earlier, focus more on unification / solidarity. So what inspired, what brought about this idea of coming together in this manner?
Well, the idea, thank you, by the way, the idea was a manifold, if you will. We here at Oyetunji have always during the Ifa Festival here at Oyetunji, or the Festival of Olumila, the Yoruba prophet or deity of destiny. And the Ifa is generally regarded as the literary corpus of the Yoruba, which is not written. It's actually oral. So during this time, yearly, I remember as a child, we would have what we called many years ago the Yoruba Convention and Revival that we would host during this time. And all of those leaders and deep thinkers of different type would find their way to Oyetunji, and we would celebrate African culture and also have talk-back sessions, forums, breakout sessions, and the like. And so, you know, growing up with that, we remembered that that was key in itself, in that it kept the leadership not just dialoguing, but coming together to help inspire the general public who find their way to Oyetunji Village and are, you know, inspired by the architecture but want to know more and go in deep. So it offers opportunity for some of those priests and high thinkers and professors and the like, to and PhDs and master degree disciplines, to find a way to Oyetunji and help inspire the general public from this crucible of African culture, this Oyetunji African Village here in Shelton, South Carolina. And then, of course, we wanted to update it. We wanted to bring it back. add a little, bring a little innovation to the table in terms of how it's displayed this particular weekend coming. And also our children were, of course, the first inspiration in that I consider myself growing older now, and some of the children need to be around some of these things. These things have to be re-implemented. Oftentimes we go to events and, you know, we let our children run free while the adults do something else. However, you know, traditionally, you know, we didn't necessarily do that. We kept the kids right with us. They had to learn how to sit still, learn how to listen. At least I did. You know, I had to learn how to sit still, learn how to listen and the like. So this particular event offers an opportunity for those people to see culture in action. The lay people, the priests, and some people may have been in this tradition and never witnessed the actual culture in action or hadn't had the opportunity to travel to West Africa. And then, of course, Dr. Umar Johnson was an inspiration. Our own people here at Oyotunji was an inspiration in that, you know, it's primarily populated, this village I'm speaking, by elders. You know, elders are seem to be the only people who are interested in anything authentic, you know. And this is worldwide, from India to Mali to Bucharest to Yemen. You know, elders are finding themselves being overrun by, you know, Greco-Roman Western developmental thinking and consciousness. And so it's a developmental stage in human beings, although, you know, at this particular conference, we just want to have the opportunity to display culture because it's not displayed nowhere in this country. So, again, the inspiration was the ancestors, if you will. That is the underlying principle here. You know, the ancestors are busy as we continue to reiterate.
Oh, I certainly say I say to that. Absolutely. Now, one of the things, or two of the things that we were able to kind of hit upon last week was the topic of independent education and homeschooling. That seems to be something today that more of our people are looking to be more involved in, and certainly the Oyotunji Village has been doing that for, as we said earlier, roughly 40 years. So, again, this is an example of what people have been talking about or are talking about today. This is an example of it happening and being consistent. And so certainly for folks to participate or attend this conference and or to just become more familiar with, you know, what it is that has been established certainly will help to bring about a greater insight and I think much more productivity. So now for the conference, this is going to be one of the areas that we'll be focused on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a phenomenal gentleman, one of the facilitators, presenters in the area of education, Dr. Cecil Austin, who people may not know, even in our college and university level, that some universities have departments of African studies, of course. But this particular professor then created a department of Africology and really incorporated, amazing educator, and has incorporated now, as he comes to this assembly, various curriculums on parenting. As the Abba said, there is just a gap in where our standard as parents, as children, as citizens, is slipping off the edge a little bit. And the elders continue to try to hold the line in terms of some of the standards that we were raised with and bringing that back as education itself, really, and knowledge itself, because we realize that people young enough to still be what we would consider children have children of their own, and yet they have no guidebook, if you will. They have no curriculum for becoming parents or educational leaders even in their community to the children. children within their villages, within their communities. So that's one of the presenters. But along the way of the planning for this assembly, we've talked to various parents, educators, those trying to work with charter schools, with homeschooling programs that are very interested and are attending the assembly. So we look forward to that area as having a great round table discussion and dialogue.
And I need to also, you know, clarify to our listeners that while we're talking about people attending and participating who have certain types of credentials, remember, family, the theme or the focal point for this conference is grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means, of course, is that, you know, we understand and understand that many of our people may not have institutionalized degrees or credentials, but in fact are truly doctors and other professors and so forth in their own right. So we just want to make sure that you know that and understand that we're talking about all aspects of our people are invited to participate, and we certainly encourage you to do so. Now, one of the other areas that we covered last week, we just want to recap a little. And for those who wish, if you didn't catch last week's program, you can always go to our website, go to the on-demand section of the site, and you can always hear any of our shows at any time at your convenience. But just to recap, there's one area that I'm definitely interested in and looking forward to dialoguing about, and we did cover this briefly last week, and I'm certainly looking forward to hearing more and again, you know, getting more in-depth in this topic, and that is, of course, for the brothers, polygamy or polygamy is an area that we often hear about, but we do know that in some cases this is not necessarily dealt with in the best way. So the time has come to begin to provide greater insight. And then the other aspect of that, of course, is polyandry, which many people have never heard about. So to have these two topics presented, I think, is amazing. So we did, of course, again, talk about it a little bit last week, but if you would, just give us a little insight into some of what will be covered at the convention on those two topics.
Gaviesi, would you like to address that?
Well, I would love to address it, although our policy, at least my policy, is that generally when trying to articulate the art of polygyny and or polyandry, if you will, it's always best that it comes from the perspective of a woman or of a female, and the female speak to it strongly, and because ultimately it just sounds like a man trying to have, you know, as much party, if you will, as he possibly can, you know. And so we really got beyond what polygyny is all about for, you know. And when we say polygyny, that's a word, the English word, the European word. So it really doesn't describe the particular institution. And so we lose 50% just by murmuring the word. However, the institution has more to deal with children, you know, and the institution was a tool that was implemented at various stages and various increments in village life, communal life. You know, it wasn't just a thing that just happened, you know. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things that had to happen either to save a town, save a family. A wealthy man may have had too much money, and it was not, and some women in the village may have not been able to be taken care of, and so those women were billeted to that man, and he had to take care of them and provide for all of those women, whether he had an emotional attachment or not. You see, so this goes far beyond that. And we even know it in this country, and I'm not going to expound on polygyny, but I think a woman should really do it in terms of not trying to convince people, but open up our minds to other women, because that's what we're talking about, the female institution. But, you know, in terms of just extrapolating this, in the South, you know, we had that institution. It was clandestine. You know about that, grandpa and great-grandpa. You know, he had that institution, but he was clandestine. And the art of being clandestine is learned from the European. Mm-hmm. Because remember, you watch the movies and things in Rome, and you see that all of the senators would gather and have these funny parties, and they would have sexual gyrations and the like, and they would have women there, not their wives, and they would have sexual favors performed in various fashions. Of course, this is to be said, this is quite normal. However, the fashion in which it's handled and curtailed, you know, it's not a party, first of all. You see what I'm saying? And it's not about having as much sex as you can have, second of all. You know, African people did things in the open. So what the African did in the open, as Cardi B. Woodson pointed out in his book, Miss Education of the Negro, what Africans did in the open, Europeans did clandestinely. So when we get on that on the low stuff, people say, oh, on the DL. That whole concept is European. There is no DL in the African mind. In fact, the African people were wholly and solely responsible, and they lived their lives geared towards their responsibility to nature and their involvement and their attachment to nature. Not just attachment, you know, I planted a seed or, you know, I cut the grass. No, their attachment to nature in that their character, their lives, the way they're going to be, was going to be no different than a flower, no different than a beast, no different than an eagle. You know, the Native Americans had the same ideology because, remember, how many Africans came over here and helped settle the culture and build the culture of North America and South America, trillions, eons, eons before the Europeans even thought about it. So, you know, this is an African ideal here, you know, in that we were close to nature. So if you study lots of the culture and lots of the literary corpuses, even all of the elders in our community would tell stories about animals and talk about how animals and their relation to humans. We didn't talk about animals because we were fixated on them, because we were living in harmony. And so when we dealt with relationships, it came from that same natural perspective. So our ancestors, to sum this up, were not interested in suppressing nature or being against nature. They were interested in providing a platform that was suitable for the development of proper communities to handle nature.
Wow. Oh, man, that is just, I'm so glad to hear that type of, not only explanation, but that type of insight, because this now really helps to not only connect the dots, but I think it helps to bridge a lot of areas that really need to be dealt with. There are in our community these idea among segments of our people that traditional practices or traditional beliefs are kind of, shall we say, not in our best interest. I'll just put it that way for now. And I think with what you just said about that, you are truly giving some understanding and insight into the fact that we were and are in harmony with nature, that it is unfortunately the oppressor who is so imbalanced that it tries to make others think the way they do and thus to be as imbalanced. And so as a result, we are discouraged to do natural types of things.
Indeed. I grew up in a polygynous family, so I can really speak to the perspective of children, you know, and I can't really speak to the perspective of the husband, you know, because I saw my father go through it, you know, and people think, well, yeah, you'd have a lot of wives, and you're the Mac, quote unquote, you know, in this country, we belittle, you know, call people the Mac, or he's gangster, or he's a pimp. However, that's a lot of work. You know, my father had, you know, 17 the most I can remember at one time was 8 wives, you know, at one time. And I know my father wasn't like henpecked. Are you familiar with the term henpecked?
Yes.
It's a country term that basically means that, you know, the women been driving you in the ground all day, you know. But basically, at one stage, I kind of thought that. But as I developed and saw what was really going on, I realized that, you know, he really had to be central and detach himself from this high level of emotional attachment and go into, like, damage control and just provide for everyone. It was about providing, you know. And then, again, if you're talking about this institution from a traditional Yoruba perspective, at least how we practice here at Oyotunji, or how I've seen because at the present there's no polygynous marriages here in Oyutunji at the present. Not to say that wouldn't change today or tomorrow. However, from what I've seen, you know, how we practice it, the woman has, each wife needs her own, has to have her own house, home cooking space. And I say cooking space because generally the cooking space was detached from the home. It was never part of the house. You had like an outdoor kitchen or a separate kitchen that you walk to. They have to have separate praying spaces, you know, separate ancestor altars, separate. So if you really had to have your ducks in a row, and you really had your had to have your money together if you was going to do this the Yoruba traditional West African, you know, whether it's Yoruba, Ghanaian, however, if you were going to do this the African way, you really had to have your ducks in a row. Now, we come into present day, whereby many people shun the term polygyny. I know when my father was on the Oprah Winfrey show, and they were talking, he had four or five of his wives on the show with him, and they were talking about polygyny. Many people, like, shot it down and talked so hard about it and how it was like this and how that. But one lady did make a point. She said, you know, one elderly European lady, she did say, well, you know, I think this institution might be a little inverted, because if it's all about sex, it should be the women who should have more than one husband, because the women can have it last longer than a man. You know, what we're trying to say is that, you know, from an African standpoint, it was a tons of responsibility and tons of preparation. And then you fast forward to today, everybody has a girlfriend, two or three or four or five or six. You know, I mean, some guys, and they got like 30 kids, and they're my age. You know, and I'm like, wow. And it's like, yeah, I got a mother for each one. Like, wow, he's just an illegitimate, polygamy kind of person. So basically what we're saying is it's happening. It's happening
exactly.
Right before our eyes all
right.
day, every day.
Right.
So we are attacking it from the European perspective.
True.
So that's why you get the knockdown, drag out with
it's
the baby
true.
Mamas. You get the courts
it's
involved.
True.
And then people just say, oh, well, anytime you have a relationship with more than one person and it's a failure. Well, it's a failure because it's not understood how you evolve with a life between more than one person, because you're building a life here. Because when did we call building a life how you dress and how, what you saw on television, how good you feel? A life is being built by day-to-day challenges. You overcome and you keep going. You overcome and you keep going. Now, these men in America, especially black men, they're not going to stop after the beautiful flowers that we term as women in our English language. They're not going to stop. And so it behooves us to sort of kind of implement, and I would think governments will be talking about this type of stuff, to implement some other form, you know, other forms of marriage, you know, because where we come from, black folks, where we come from, we didn't have one form of marriage. It wasn't just a Wagnerian ceremony, dun, 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 dun. You know, it was an entire, it was 14 different types of marriage, okay?
Gotcha.
Now, just quail on that for a few days, you know, and each one spoke to a particular problem within the community, because everything doesn't speak to every, one thing doesn't speak to every problem. You see, so our ancestors were very diverse. And I have to keep saying our ancestors. Some listeners may be like, well, who's our ancestors? Who are those people? Well, it wasn't this culture and it wasn't the European. So let's start there and begin to investigate. So again, it's happening today anyway. And men are having women all around the country, all around the nation. It's just that we have to build an institution around it and some rules and guidelines. Basic. Mm-hmm. And in terms of polyandry, the women are doing it too.
Exactly.
And in our culture, women generally didn't have more than one husband because, and I like to call this, they didn't have more than one husband because of the Maury factor. You know, ever watch Maury Povich? In our culture, that didn't exist in African culture. You know, 400 years ago, that didn't exist. That might have existed in Europe with some of the wild things that were going over there. You know, I mean, they were murdering people left and right, inquisitions and dark years and dark lights, you know. So that wasn't a part of our culture, basically, is where I'm going. And I'm going to stop there.
Wow. Well, on that note, we are going to take a break just briefly, because when we come back, we want to go into some of the other areas that the conference is going to cover. And as we indicated, we're going to talk a little bit about a few areas that people tend to kind of move away from, and that, of course, today is what we call nation building, society building, village building, We want to talk about how we need to proceed to do that in the 21st century, which means to really kind of up the ante and bring this thing forward and to really make certain that we're able to sustain it, as we're seeing with the Oyutuji Village. But we're going to also talk about another area of interest that has been brought to our attention on numerous occasions, both on this radio program and, of course, at different kinds of forums that we have the ability to sometimes attend, and that is the issue of homosexuality in what some call traditional African religion and spiritual realms, but also within our community and how we see that we need to deal with that today. So we're going to take a quick break, because that's going to be kind of hot. We want to give all of you the opportunity to kind of chill for a moment so that we can really go into that in the best ways possible. Again, remember, family, you can tune in, or shall I say you can go to the chat room if you want to put some comments or questions there. But we're going to also open up the phone line for you shortly. But for right now, we just want to share some thoughts with you, and then we're going to be right back. You are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation.
Thank you.
And we are coming back. And we want to remind all of you that you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. In the background, we're listening to what some call an oldie but a goodie, but we are saying like 1969. Yes, we're talking about the Temptations. No matter how hard you try, you can never stop us, obviously. Well, we've been talking with His Majesty over Abe Pumi II, who, of course, is the leader of the Yoruba people here in North America, the Little Tunja Village. And we've also been talking with our dear sister, Iya Ibu. Well, we're going to go back to our dialogue, and again, we're talking about the upcoming Pan-African Grassroots Conference that's going to take place June the 29th through July the 1st. Now, before we go back to our dialogue, we want to remind you that we started off the show telling you how, with this being June, many observe it as Black Music Month. One of the reasons why we played this particular tune that you just heard, well, there's several reasons. Obviously, the message is like timeless, you know. It's so applicable for today, even though this is what was being said in 1969. Some of you may not have even been born then. Others were probably so young you vaguely remember it, but the fact still remains some of the issues, some of the problems, some of the things that we need to be focusing on. Well, they were happening then, and as you can see, certainly still happening now. We know that some may have an issue with being called Black, but we want to remind you from our perspective here at New Day, we're talking about a frame of mind, a frame of reference. And if you understand and overstand that, then you definitely are tuned into the right show. If you don't understand that, you're still in tune to the right show because you'll learn something. But at any rate, we're going to continue our dialogue for tonight, and what we're going to do is fast forward a bit and go into the area of nation building. This was, of course, a popular term, phrase, a few years ago, and for some, it's still something that we strive for today. Certainly, we have seen a society in our midst right here in North America, and I'm talking about the Oyotunji Village. Has been in existence now for 40 years and has been independent, has maintained the idea of being African-centered or African perspective-oriented, but also very traditional. And so we want to talk about, with that said, how to transform the idea. There's so much information that has come about in these past years. We have so much access to a variety of things. So how do we now connect these things together? How do we now transform into really sustaining Black community? We hear people talk about Black community, but for real, we ain't controlling nothing in Black community throughout the U.S. So that whole notion of being in a Black community, that might need to be readjusted a bit, but certainly we know we must continue to strive for that. So now, how can we really begin to manifest these ideas in a more realistic and, again, in a more sustaining kind of way? So we're going to go back to our dialogue, and I'm going to ask the Oba, having, of course, been involved with the Oyotunji Village for an extended period of time, obviously, and seeing how it has grown and developed, how do you feel we can bring this into a bigger scope? You've certainly been able to maintain what was envisioned 40 years ago. So with that said, how can we also now set these type of examples in our communities?
Thank you. We're holding on by strings and threads. We're holding on by strings and threads. You got to you know, I have to bring you into reality scope here. In that, you know, we are maintaining, and generally, you know, nothing new. How people have maintained you know, for eons in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't been here for eons, but for hundreds of years, you know, in this country, we've been maintaining. And so, you know, going forward, we want to thrive. We want to thrive, not just thrive and with BMWs and silly trinkets. We want to really thrive amongst each other. Let's really feel this energy of why we're here. You know, once we can possibly move to multi-century sensory, you know, aspects of living, you know, then we would be able to develop communities, you know, that was or that can be, you know, a model. Not necessarily saying a model like Oyotunji or a model like any place else, but that can be a model for the future living of people, you know. Not just a model in terms of whether you share or borrow butter, but a model in terms of how you build, how you live, how you work with each other, how you institutionalize human behavior in different ways so that it's cohesive with productive development of humans. You know, so, you know, I just want to reiterate that, yes, we are here and we continue to do what we do. However, yes, it's a phenomenal job. And it, you know, the work of many being done by a few. And that's the way it is in terms of grassroots. It's like that everywhere, you know. Yeah, it's like that everywhere throughout the country. And so I think it's more or less, before we get into talking about developing communities, it's going to be, you know, a little time for us to get together and just, you know, kind of develop ourselves before we can move into developing communities. Because once again, you know, like anything, the ego is always looking for a place to channel itself. Once it gets dumbed down over here, it goes over here. It goes over there. So you have these people who generally tried 900 religions and still find themselves unhappy because what they were looking for, you know, really didn't exist because it was they were only looking for something that their ego had manifested in them. So their ego may have wanted to live through a culture. They wanted to live through a village. They wanted to live through the Shriners, the Lions, the Masons, or what have you. You see, and so it's evident because as we look around, very few organizations, you know, except the grassroots, are really in place to deal with the various facets of what we term community. You see, so I would be short in saying, okay, everybody should just live like this. However, my father always iterated that the purpose of this particular village was to give a snapshot. Not to give you the entire picture because you can't get it. Because once you drive out the village, you're going to say, wow, I'm back in America. And so you have a double consciousness thing happening. So, you know, it's just a snapshot for you to understand that, you know, your people had a culture. Your people can live together. And that beauty that one feels when they arrive at Oyotunji Village and they see the colors, the beauties, the interaction, the brotherhood, the fellowship, all with the backdrop of a traditional village and traditional culture. It's beautiful. However, that is just a snapshot. That's for you to internalize and take home. Now, many people have done just that. They've internalized that and took it, you know, and I would like to just highlight some of the young people in Atlanta, Georgia, who are doing this, various young men and women, you know, taking this thing forward, taking that snapshot, once again, that they got when they visited Oyotunji, however many times they've visited, and they continue to visit. To continue to gain, you know, that panorama, because like I said, it's a snapshot. You want the panorama. So you have to pay many visits if you're interested in this thing. If you're interested in playing ball, you'd go to the court every day and practice that. You know, if you're interested in film, then you'd go into a film school and you get you a camera. You see? And so it has to be what we have to become interested in, not interested necessarily in African culture or any particular culture before we can even live together. Because one thing about cultures is they bring up that ego once again in people, and before people can even live together, they got this cultural ego, this attachment to what somebody did to us or what we've done to ourselves or how we are as a people, and that plays into any sort of relationship that can be developed from there on up. So it goes back to each person developing in themselves what they want to give to the community. And this is all like kind of the foundation of our thinking in promoting this year's grassroots assembly, is that what do you want to give to community? Okay, fine. That's what you want to give? Perfect. Okay, well, let's go and do that. What do you want from community? Nothing? Okay, fine. You want nothing and give everything? Fine. You want everything and give nothing? Fine. That's fine, too. As long as we know everyone's place in the community, and then we know who to depend on and when and where. You know, because it ultimately boils down to responsibility. No, I'm sorry. Responsibility is not a strong enough word. It boils down to obligation. It boils down to obligation when you're talking about this word community, once again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we loosely use that, and I'm trying to give it respect every time, that, you know, because we loosely use that word. And we say, oh, my community. In actuality, we're talking about a physical place, not
mm-hmm.
physical. Community has nothing to do with physicality. Oh, the major physical part of a community are the people, their bodies, their energy, their color, skin, hair, nails, and that. That's the physical part of a community. Outside of that, it's all intuitive, and it's all multi-sensory. So when we're talking about community, we have to move beyond what I've recently learned is our five sensory faculty.
Mm-hmm.
See? When you base things off of your five senses, they're there for everything. They can feel mosquitoes. They can feel everything. They're not partial to anything. And so they're liable to react. And we can never get anything off the ground in terms of living together, breaking bread, you know, helping each other, raise each other's children, looking out. Literally, when I was a kid, at least, my mother lived in the city. I could go, and if I was outside after 10, boy, where your mom at? You know, it was that type of thing happening. That's a particular level of community. That's called looking out. You know, I learned from the young people today, they say you got to look out for the cookout. You know, you got to look out because the cookout is feeding everybody. The cookout is feeding all types of people. Everybody's music is everything. So if you're not looking out for the cookout, then, you know, if you're not picking up trash at the cookout, if you're not cooking something, if you're not entertaining the kids, you know, our family reunions is just a microcosm of some ancient African peace in us. You know,
mm-hmm.
family reunions didn't become family reunions until black folks started doing it. You know, I loosely say that without no data, you know, just from, mm-hmm. you know, knowing certain things. And again, so your question was how to develop this and implement it in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, pay a visit. And then once you pay a visit, the spirits will open you up once you pay a visit to the sacred forest. Because they're not saying that you have to come to all your children first to open up. You don't. You just have to be astute student. You be a good student. You know, and really study history, because history is factual for the most part, depending on who you read. Science is a factual, again, for the most part, depending on who you read from. But we should be reading from our own people. African writers. Sheikh Antadia, African-American writer. African-American
mm-hmm.
writers. People who think like we do. You know, there are many writers like Uri Bear, European, who writes on Yoruba culture. However,
mm-hmm.
European, you won't be able to do it from our perspective. So if we can be good students of the history and the wisdom of eternity, then we can implement this wherever we go. But when it comes to black folks, what we term as black folks, African-American, Negro, Spook Jigaboo, or nigger, however you want to term us today, when it comes to those descendants of Africa, no matter their skin color, this particular culture speaks directly to them, and they can implement it in their lives from every level, from the marital level, the social level, all the way up to how you bury your dead. It can be implemented and add fervor and color. Everyone loves color.
It seems that, and I thank you for that, it is something that I've given a lot of thought to over the years, and you have definitely given us quite a few answers, or, you know, some things to really think about. And one of the things that, as you were giving us that information, one of the things I was thinking about was conversations that I've had over the years. And one of the things that we've discussed is kind of being from going from point A to point B to point C, meaning that as we have these journeys and we're able to get access to information or experience various things, be it our culture and learning more about our history and so forth, again, the word transforming these things into an area where we would like to apply it. Historically speaking, it appears that when that has happened, if it was to be presented in a way that was really going to be productive and beneficial, then it ran into opposition. And so it seems that to bring our ideas, our realities into a urban environment or into a setting where, for the most part, again, we really don't have a lot of control over that venue, it seems that the transformation, once the person experiences going to Old Tunji Village or a festival or whatever and get that rejuvenation or get that inspiration, well, once they do that and then take it back to the hood or back to the community, they're then confronted with the reality of the day-to-day mush and other stuff and oftentimes end up succumbing to it again. So this is why in trying to get more clarity as to how can we really be more effective in once you become inspired or enlightened, to be able to really bring that into a setting that oftentimes, is going to be very complicated. Because, and here's the political side to that. Being in this society, obviously, being amongst a group of people, for lack of a better word, who have a history of oppression, have a history of inflicting themselves on others, it's not very likely that they will sit back and let people do something beneficial for themselves. I mean, they've shown this historically over a couple hundred years, to say the least. So now, in this day and age, what can we realistically begin to do to counter that, when in fact we've seen how there have been groups of people, individuals or what have you, who have done what you've said, but yet, again, have been confronted with some form of demise, oftentimes killed, oftentimes set up, oftentimes harassed.
Interesting, I would just say this, and I totally want Ia to chime in on this one, because it's ultimately what the mothers say, you know, and their wisdom that's going to drive us forward, at least in my belief. When I talk about the multisensory, you know, the multisensory and the five-sense sensory, you know, when you have a five-sense sensory, like you said, you return to your hood and, you know, you have to face the same problems again. Well, that's a lot of times because we are filtering everything through the same lens that we left with. This experience should and I hope we can get this, and we just have to verbalize it. This experience has to transform into this. People who are five sensory, you know, they're the type of people that believe that, you know, if I see it, I will believe it, you know. Mm-hmm. But multi-sensory people or people of African descent, now our power lies in us believing it, and then we see it.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Well, I am going to chime in here, you know, and I'm glad to give it, you know, it run its course with the young people. But I tell you, listening in, it really pushes an elder, because I do remember 1969 very well, as a matter of fact. and you know, this is how I would respond to you. You know, number one, I think that the entire program so far this evening has very much been on the track of nation building, because what really happens and what it made me think about as I was listening is a particular video that we have on YouTube called Soul Searching. And I beg to differ with each of you, but then I realized that you weren't alive in the time where people actually went home or were inspired, be it church or Jesse Jackson or Dr. King or whoever it was, or March, a Freedom March, or a boycott, or Rosa Parks, whoever it was that truly took them to the next level. And they did exactly that. They had to go home and they had to figure out, okay, am I with the program, or am I just going to, you know, ride on the sideline. And so I put out there, you know, to the table tonight, it comes to soul searching. What do we do in order to create these communities or in order to actually engage the art of community is that we have to make some decisions right here. And I totally agree with His Majesty that really before the collective decision can become strong and clear and begin to breathe a life of its own, the individuals have to really, really make some decisions. And you know, in terms of even the conversation with Marissa Alexander in Florida, I mean, okay, you know, do your homework. Look who is in Florida. Look who was the governor. See what Florida is about. Mm-hmm. Think about
That's
whether
right.
or not you really could write a legislator. I mean, what could you really do? And so there's
right.
a point where Malcolm X said, no, I'm not going to go back there and be called a nigger or a Negro. I'm not going for it. Here's where I'm going. I'm going over here. And Dr. King said, no, I'm not going to be treated like a piece of trash. No, if they have it, then all men are equal. I'm going to have it. And so this is the type of thinking that when we talk about movement building, when we talk about resurrection, this is the point that we're at, point blank. And so, you know, the whole parts of it, you know, the fact that in reality there are zillions of baby daddies and baby mamas, and you do have a compound, and you are in polygyny. So, you know, the reality check is, for me, is the first step, and looking to this gathering and the dialogues that will come, that we will express to one another to say, you know, keep it real. Are you really keeping it real? Because don't give no lip service to, you know, the system or the capitalist or the consumerism or whatever's going down the street. Is it working for you? Is a broken food system working for you? Is you know, these different peddling things that you just go to your job every day, you just suck it in and say, well, I'll do the best I can. And it was nice down at the Village last weekend, but, you know, right now I'm trying to get the rent. You got to get really real with it. And if you're not going to participate in the bull, don't do it. You know what I'm saying? Don't do it. You know, and I, as I listen to Marissa, I'm like, well, you know, personally, let's just break her out. You know what I'm saying? But I come from a different time. I come from a completely different time where people either, you know, were fed up to the point that they were not going to perpetuate something that did not work for the good of their family or their household. They were not going to do it. And so, you know, this system where we get into the relationship, oh, that didn't work out. Okay, well, we got one kid. We'll just take this kid and we'll go on to the next relationship. No idea how all of these siblings are a family and how they will move forward together as a family. You know, there are villages everywhere. There are villages everywhere, in every family, in every neighborhood, in every hood, there are villages. Are we willing to recognize them? As the Abba said, are we willing to institutionalize them? Are we willing to say, well, this is how we're going to educate? Because we see that the education, you know, okay, the mind is a terrible thing to waste. You know, you sent these people off, you made robots out of them, and then you gave them a job or didn't give them a job, or, you know, maybe they'll get to Wall Street and be one of the crooks that doesn't have to go to jail when they take all the country's money. Look at the reality that you live in and really check it. Just check it and say, well, let me see now. And for a vast amount of the generations here, that's all they know. They never lived in a time different from that. So it's really, really hard for them to, you know, not only be inspired and be motivated and say, okay, well, this is what we need, or we need a good leader, or we need money, or we need land, or we need to grow our food. They want to just take one area, and as the Abba says, the first thing we're going to come to is that each of us plays a particular part. As our red brothers and sisters have said, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. So we are here. As we see, you know, thousands of people checking out at an amazing rate every day, and we're still here, we have to know that there is a divine destiny going on. And the quicker that we get real with what our real role is, and it's not necessarily about the taxes, the J-O-B, or, you know, next week's party gala. It's really not. That's not where you live, and that's not what you're looking at in that man in the mirror that Michael was singing about. That's not real. And so I think part of the conversation and dialogue that I hope that you will go forward with, because I can tell that you're going to go forward with this conversation until the answers come to the top of the table, is, you know, people who are willing to step into the reality of consciousness. This conscious evolution is not built on lip service. It's really built on what's real, what's tangible, and what's sustainable, what will go forward. The things that are just here today, gone tomorrow, you know, that's a waste of breath and energy, really, to continue talking about them, really. But I probably
that's what I call truth to power. Yeah, thank you so much for that. Okay, well, before we close out tonight, we're going to go to our last topic. And also, for those who, again, have a comment or a question, you must push 1 so that I know that you want to get in. For those of you who are online, you will have to dial in because I do not have access to our chat room. Somehow it did something it wanted to do, and I can't get into it. But anyway, if you are online, you have to call in to 646-652-2232. If you want to be heard, please push 1. Okay, we have a few more minutes, and with that, we're going to go to our last topic for tonight. And that, of course, is, I really wanted to hear more of what Iyah was saying, but we did promise that we would kind of approach a topic that we need to begin discussing more about, and we certainly want to hear the Oba's comments on this, because in certain circles today we're hearing more conversation about the issue of homosexuality within not only the Black community but within our religions, and not just within the so-called Christian church but also within traditional African societies, religions, and spiritual realms. So with that said, perhaps we can hear a little. I know we don't have much time right now, but we want to at least begin talking about this to provide some clarity, because some of the things that I've heard certainly struck me as being, if not strange, just outright incorrect. And so I'm not an authority, so I thought maybe it's best that we talk with some people who do know, and then that way we can all get some clarity. So with that said, what is the position, if I may, on the issue of homosexuality within traditional African culture or spiritual realms?
Good question.
Uh-oh.
Good question. Because, as you know, it's a topic worldwide. This is a topic that's being talked about from end to end, globe to globe, different places around the world. However, each culture has its way of dealing with this topic, just as they have a way of dealing with every topic. No subject of humanity is brand new. You know, the only subject that's brand new is the flowering and the tolerance, you know, that's happening with this subject. You know, in terms of homosexuals in the world, they've always lived in the underworld. They've been there. They've been there somewhere in the world. They've been there. However, you know, in terms of, if I can extrapolate something from what Malidome Soma, who is a West African writer, he's from Senegal, and he iterated in a discussion that in his society, men who could channel the energy of a female, walk like a female, talk like a female, kind of what we call drag today in this country, they were considered higher level beings because they could channel a female energy. Now, you're talking about a maternal society. I'm talking about a patriarchal society. I'm talking about a maternal society. So that was looked at as a quote-unquote higher level of existence, because the energy of the female is so dynamic, so worshipped, so much venerated, not because of the beauty, but because of the position in the universe, whether you're a female cat, a female goat, a female lizard, what have you, the female. And to add, as Malidome was iterating, in his culture, when that happens, it's celebrated in a way. And it's interestingly enough, it doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen every day. Now, I've never been of the homosexual persuasion And so it's difficult for me to talk about how they think or how they view things or the like. And we say they like they're like it's some other people. You know, these are human beings too, you know, at the end of the day. However, what is it in us? What is it in us that creeps us out about something we don't understand? You know, it's a bigger question. It's not just about homosexuality, because when you're talking about human acceptance and human tolerance, it's never about the subject. You know, it's always about, you know, the brain lock of humanity. You know, many things came to pass that were groundbreaking. You know, the latest thing that came to pass that was groundbreaking is people wearing their pants with their butt out. You know, that's one of those things that are groundbreaking. Many things are happening groundbreaking. However, this subject deserves more attention because in the West, it takes on a whole other vibration. It takes on the vibration of, well, now instead of just being in the closet, we come out the closet. Not only do we come out the closet as homosexuals, then, you know, we want to get married. You know, we want to have rights just like conventional marriage and the like. Now, in terms of marriage and the like, it depends on the culture. If you want to say, well, in Yoruba culture, did men marry each other, or traditional West African culture, did men marry each other for the sake of being lovers and for the sake of a romance and for the sake of raising a family? Not necessarily. Not true. Not in that fashion. However, there were aspects of West African culture that did involve what we would call transgender or the changing of roles, if you will. And like I mentioned drag earlier. That's an American-European type of thing over here. However, in West Africa, you know, I've seen it with my own eyes. The men dress up as what we call gelede. They dress up as gelede. And they do dances and poems and stories and particularly portray the movements and the actions of a woman. And the women come out and dance around these masquerade figures. However, it's got nothing to do with, you know, two people of the same sex trying to raise a family. Now, in Africa, you have always had powerful people who had husbands and wives, although those of the same sex generally did not necessarily have conjugal visits, if you will. They didn't have, that wasn't a part of it. Although the concept of one marrying into a family and becoming a part of that family, you know, or a wife of that family, in that you were in reverence to the head of the family, you had to work for the head of the family, you had to do all of these sorts of things, which is quite consistent to what's going on in the U.S. In terms of gay marriage. However, in the traditional eyes of what I've learned and experienced is that, you know, it was never passed off as a thing as, oh, we're lovers and we're just going to have, you know, a nuclear male-on-male or female-on-female relationship. You know, and that's not to say that it doesn't exist. It obviously exists today. The president came out and said, basically, I can agree with the president. The president said, look, if they want to get married, let them get married. Otherwise, we'll be fighting this thing forever. And then, you know what, it'll be another thing like civil rights until some blood is shed and a bunch of people are killed and everybody says, okay, let everybody have their way. You know, which in actuality is begging the question in all of humanity. This situation is asking all of humanity, are you ready to look at things from a different angle? Are you ready to accept people for the different angles and paths that they take? You know, because it's throughout history, we've always banished people. It's easy to say, oh, we don't like you, get in the closet, go away. That's very easy. We've always done that. You know, if we study history, we've always done that. We try to get rid of the witches, or the Europeans try to get rid of the witches in Europe. Many African societies would banish people on one level or the other. Many native societies would do quite the same. However, you know, when we start to extrapolate this and understand this and talk about this and bring meaning to it and find a way to live with it because it's not going anywhere, then we call out to that higher level of thinking. And what I would like to continue to pause the multi-sensory, you know, faculty, you know, because it doesn't involve intellect. Once you start putting intellect to this, you want to put some science to it. When human beings know diddly, you know, we as human beings know diddly, so we need to learn a lot from this particular situation. And I can't say tonight what it's right or it's wrong or it's this or it's that. It obviously has its place because we're confronted with it. And it has its place in India. It has its place in China. It has its place all over the world. in various societies. And so who is to say it shouldn't exist? And so I'm not sure what your question would be from this point on.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to comment briefly, and then I'm going to go to our line, and I think we have a caller that has a question or a comment. Unfortunately, we are losing our internet stream. However, we still have our podcast going, so we will continue to do that. But I just want to clarify that what I'm referring to in raising the issue of homosexuality as it pertains to our community today, it's not in comparison with some traditional things that you mentioned a few moments ago. That's not what we're referring to. And I also want to add that we're talking
what
about
are you referring
something
to?
I'm gonna say that now. We're talking about something that has the ability to change the population increase or productivity or something of that nature. So essentially, okay, not in the context of something that is, you know, relatively harmless or saw in a cultural light. We're not talking about it in that context. We're talking about it in the context of a sociological existence in our community that has the ability to change the ability of productivity from a genetic standpoint or from a population standpoint. So with that said, I'm going to go to our caller at 8282. And did you have a question or a comment for us tonight?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I hear you clearly.
Yeah, you know who it is, and you know I couldn't swallow that. I'd like to address your listening audience to try to make a point of clarity about this discussion, because it seems like there's some confusion as to what's being said here. It sounds like we're actually condoning and permitting homosexuality. What's interesting is that the discussion started citing someone who is known to be tampered, known to have sold out to be a pet and a puppet of the Europeans, Maladoma Somay, who has been raped, molested, and everything else in the world. So, of course, he'd be gay-friendly. But for anybody to suggest that it has any part and has any relationship to anything divine is totally, totally false. First off, when we're talking about religion, the only religions that exist are African religions, because religion, by its very definition, is the ritual incorporation of divine law. So what we're speaking with, what we're dealing with here, is divine law. And homosexuality is outside of divine law. It is so therefore it would be repulsive to anything that is divine. It's anti-life, you know. So let's get that point clarified first off before we go any further. Homosexuality does not exist in our traditions nowhere. Anybody that cites it is citing some European fabricated scholarship or whatever. It does not exist and has never been condoned. They are not gatekeepers. They are not higher beings. They're not channeling nothing. They are anything. But I do agree with the speaker when he said that it has its place. It does have its place in certain societies. And all these are societies relating to the whites and their offspring who will always incarnate as spirits of disorder, and therefore it is natural to them. But it has no place, no relation whatsoever in any way, shape, or form with anything African. Period.
Wow. Yeah.
And for the record, my name is Akumfo Chango, so that everybody understands who we, you know, what we're dealing with here.
Well, and thank you, Baba. Interestingly enough, it is a situation that exists, and it exists among humans. And whether we blame it on the media or we blame it on whatever, And when I say blame it, I mean it's exacerbation. You know, it's exacerbated over the years, as we can see. And as we found out, it was taken out of the sociological book as a mental deconstruct or as a mental illness. It was taken out of the book in the 70s. And so you know, there's a lot of issues that lean toward why it's so prevalent today. However, it does exist, and we have to learn its place and learn how to live with it. We could debate historical perspectives, you know, and that's a beautiful conversation. I would love to. We don't have the time. However, the best thing for us to do is, as human entities, find its place and venerate it according to how it needs to be venerated, because everything deserves veneration. Nothing is non-connecting. Nothing is not out of order. You know, we live in a cosmos. And as a matter of fact, cosmos means order. And so there is an order, but our pea brain will not allow us to find an order because we're too busy thinking about this gay guy wants me, or he wants my kid, or the system is after me, the man is after me, or the European did this to us. Okay, great. However, moving forward, we have to venerate its place because it is not going nowhere unless we have another civil war where we all get together and fight each other until it's done, and then it's still going to exist. You know, remember, the Europeans thought that black Americans were animals and they lived like this, that, and the third. That was a mental construct. Much of that still survives today. However, through evolution and understanding, we move forward, and many Europeans do not live in that space, if you will. So it is a matter of flowering of humanity, really understanding our mission as humanity and moving forward. Or we could debate, you know, religion, which has always been a quagmire. You know, you end up nowhere debating, you know, human topics solely off the base of religion. Religion is just a pointer. Culture is a pointer. At the end of the day, you know, it's you and that particular individual.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for the host, if I can, because I really wanted to understand your point. And I think it kind of gives a answer to where we are in this conversation. Was your point that homosexuality in the black community in particular, sociologically, if I understood you correctly, was going to take us to a place where we decreased our population, or it directly impacted how many people are on the planet 10 years from now? Is that what you were leaning to there?
Well, anything that, shall we say, creates an imbalance or upsets the natural order of something, and I dare say, having now worked with young females in particular and older females too, what I'm now seeing is certainly an increase that has just kind of happened out, almost out the clear blue sky, in such a way that young girls are now not only engaging in this kind of activity and behavior, but are literally encouraging other young girls to engage in this. And in some situations, especially in the urban cities, are now formulating, if I won't call them gangs per se, but are formulating groups of females that almost attempt to force other females to engage in this behavior. So with this escalation happening, and literally here in Philadelphia, we've had cases where girls have been jumped in order to force them into certain types of acts. And it would be also a form of initiation. So with the increase of this, with the acceptability of this, I mean, we can only look at this in some way of saying, if this increases like that, I dare say from a community standpoint, it will have a ultimate impact
right.
on some other things.
Right. and not that
I would like to jump in here, if I may.
Okay.
I would just, you know, in terms of how humans have dealt with things, you know, throughout history, we've always tried to deal with the problem. You know, when you have a sore that develops on your body and it's because of cancer, the sore is just a symptom. We're talking about symptoms here. And, you know, the doctor does recognize the symptom, but he has to extrapolate the origin. And I can, in terms of a lot of females, I have good conversations with her, interestingly enough, with a great deal of sisters, and they often say that, you know, the men are not worth 2 cents. So they find solace in their own time. And this is just bare bottom brain. Yep. If you do not find solace and you keep running into knuckleheads, young penises who consider themselves men and can't swing a hammer, can't use a shovel. That's what I'm saying. This is disheartening to the female energy. The United States, the world, has decreased the male energy to nothingness. Computers can do it. Machines can do it. Men are reduced to pushing buttons. So
in no way, shape, or form, at no time in history can we begin to accept or venerate disorder. The Orisha, the Vodun, the Abyssal are repulsed by anything that is disorder. The problem seems to be just in our definitions of what is human. We keep extending, it seems like there's an attempt here to extend our humanity to those who are incapable of humanity. You know what I mean? And it's interesting that we spoke on cancer, because when you think about the existence in the African on this planet, we go back several million years at least. But nobody on this telephone or around on this show can document a European 30,000 years on this planet. So when you compare 30,000 to 7 million, that amounts to an infection. And what's happened is we have an infection in the body of black humanity, and we cannot begin to accept disorder. See, disorder is not the opposite of order. There's order, and then there's unordered. When you start accepting disorder in your life, what you're dealing with is a perversion of order, and that is not natural. That is not God created. That is not divinely entertained or accepted. This is the perversion of order. This is not something you can blame God for or blame. This is an occurrence. This is a disease, an infection that we have to deal with. Just like at any point in your life, a small percentage of your cells cease to function properly. But if you're functioning properly, your body will do what? It will isolate and then eliminate these dysfunctional cells. Because what do dysfunctional cells do? They attack healthy cells. They can do nothing else. And this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a cancer, and I don't care how much you want to get along with them or like them, whatever, you're dealing with a cancer. You cannot correct them. You cannot lead them with your humanity. You cannot lead them with your divinity. You cannot correct them. You cannot heal them. It's a dysfunctional cell.
Well, I believe we have to be careful when we talk about, you know, humanity, each other, individuals, the people who do certain things as the worst thing possible, because you have to remember, you know, humanity is cancerous. You're cancerous. I am cancerous. Not only
you
in our bodies, but we're cancerous
to
our environment.
I'm a divine.
I'm trying to extrapolate the larger picture here, in that all of humanity are living in out of total cohesion. You know,
and
so
this is after the infection. You're talking about Africans who have been infected with a disease.
I'm talking about
properly. Just like that first grain of salt, can't hurt you until you keep allowing it near you, in your body. Before you know it, you got diabetes, high blood pressure, and things of that nature.
Yes.
Well, we talk about these brothers who are not working, who are not, can't pick up a shovel, these are behaviors learned from our savage captors. This is not who we are. This is what we're being engineered to become. People always ask how our great civilization failed. They failed only when we allow disease close to us. We accept the disease into our body.
Well, indeed, I agree with you. We accept the disease into our body. However, I'm not talking about black people, white people, yellow people. I'm talking about 7 billion people living, most of whom are living out of cohesion with nature.
Okay.
Now, we can talk about gay people being the poison of the earth. Great, that's good. If that's your
white
opinion,
people too.
I can't argue with that. But my point is that there are greater things that speak towards the demise of human beings than like sex and sleeping together. You know, how about heart disease? How about, you know, the diseases from food kill more people each year than most wars and anything else in this country? Okay, the kids shoot each other more than anything else in this country. Okay, and so we really, our energies have to be put towards solutions. So one solution. To keep insistence from saying, okay, I can't deal with a man because he's a knucklehead, he don't know nothing, so I'm going to deal with the sisters because that's why I find solace, because women are about finding solace and protection, regardless of where it comes from, So our point is we deal with the young men. We bring young men into Rites of Passage collective in our collective city. Bring young men in and talk to them truly about what it means to be a man. Not just, well, son, you know, the birds and the bees. No, talk to them about the things that really matter, whatever that may be in their respective communities. Because if we're good and if we're decent, going to be good ancestors, then we're going to have to articulate to the young people, once again, their role. And that's where you start, trying to start at the top and talk about this. No, we need to go ahead in our community, start bringing young people through these egg banks. This weekend at the African Village, we have a female rites of passage. All of the females who are doing rites of passage are in one place tonight, sleeping. Those women are going to be talking to them, telling them how fly men are and how quick men are to get what they want and bounce and this, that, and the third. They're going to tell them about their power. They're going to tell them about their power. And so this is community grassroots in action. And this is going on in various places, but it's just not enough. There's not enough dialogue from elder to young people. The television and the media is raising the kids. So those are some of the areas we can start to work in terms of solutions. Now, I will never sit here, you know, and debate who's right or who's wrong, is it good or bad. I'm not with that. I'm totally about if it's bad, then we should be dealing with solutions.
You just said something about venerating homosexuality as if you're talking about homosexuality as if that's a viable, solution for the African family.
I didn't say it was a viable solution. I said as humanity, we have to recognize those things that we've traditionally just kicked under the rug, because what you're saying, you're coming from a kick under the rug ancient humanity perspective. The world is going forward. The world is moving forward. People are understanding things differently. If you don't believe it, turn on the TV and watch a gay parade. Okay? Watch one of those. I'm not into who created
it. You're saying accept it because it exists. You're saying we got to deal with it because it exists.
My brother, are you going to let me finish?
Well, unfortunately, family, we are running out of time. And this is obviously a topic, as I knew, this would be a very hot topic. And one that we will have to definitely continue to dialogue about. So I'm going to give each person the opportunity to do their closing comment, because we are approaching the 1 o'clock hour, and this is just a conversation that and a dialogue that we will definitely have to continue, and we will.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would my motto at least has always been culture is the chief magistrate. If you learn a bit of culture, then you have a bit of direction. Without direction, then you lost in the forest.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna try to sum it up, but you know my mind is really split, and I hope you go forward with another program on this, because if we could have gone further, I really would have asked the elder, the gentleman there, you know, because I kept hearing Hitler. I kept hearing, you know, well, I bet Hitler thought that the Jews were an infection and a disorder and a affront to his divinity. And he said, well, just put them in the house and burn them, shit. You get rid of them. And so, you know, if that's the approach that we're going to take, it's always about healing. It's always about solutions. And you brought this program forward this evening for unification, for nation building, for solidarity, for things that take us forward, that bring us closer together, and that can never be built on, I don't like you, you know, your neckline is too far, you know, or your collar's not high enough, or you don't have the right kind of tie on. That's, you know, we're past that. We're past that. And so we hope that the listeners will come out if they're in the area, and if not, we certainly want to do the plug for our website, which is oyosunji.org, and say that we invite everyone to stay connected to North America's oldest authentic African village, where, in fact, all of humanity goes forward in one shape, form, or another, where we pull together as family, as the human family on the planet, because that is the truth. If you add 7 billion people on the planet, what to think about is, you know, how to go forward with that many people, really.
All right, all right. Mm-hmm. Brother Shango?
Only thing I can say is, since this is that I doubt very seriously, and I would ask everybody to consider and ask themselves You ask their ancestors whether their intention, whether in their spirit, they would want us to move forward and unite with those who have raped and murdered and murdered and murdered and murdered and raped and murdered and continue to hunt our children in the street, and that we're going to come together and sing Kumbaya. This is not going to happen. They are not us, and we are not them. So anybody who claims to be in connection with any kind of deity would know this. So the homosexual is disorder. You can fix everything by choosing tomorrow, today, to align every thought, action, and deed with order and rejection, hatred, divine hatred of disorder. And if
wow.
you study your history, you know who your enemy is. And if you think that has anything to do with Hitler, that sounds like some European propaganda. Kumbaya.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing. In terms of European propaganda, we need to cut Europeans off all the way, and that's what
yeah.
we need to do if that's what we're going to do. And not talk about it. We need to be about it. We should be creating our own clothes, our own shoes, our own
okay.
house, our own folks.
That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing here.
If you cut off Europeans tomorrow and get rid of the oppressor and the person that just did you wrong, we're living in the past.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's a global village now. I'm sorry, but you can Google it.
Capitulation is not an option. My name is Akoko Shango. I'm representing Original People United and Restored R, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're doing a demonstration of what black folks, African people, can do for ourselves by ourselves. We're at 25th New York, Philadelphia. You can dial 720-RACE-FIRST. Or you can reach me directly at 215-852-8282. If you really want some real solutions, you want to do what's good for the race.
Thank you for your dialogue. Right. I appreciate the conversion this evening. And I don't think conversion this evening, you know, between two different understandings and two factions, and we should have more of these, you know.
Absolutely.
If we don't
Absolutely.
Speak about it, it's going to fester and turn into a disease. So I appreciate that, Brother Shango.
I can.
Yeah. I appreciate
you,
brother.
Yeah.
I look forward to more dialogue. I think I'm going to have to make it down there. Holler at you.
I can. All right. All right. All right. That's what we're talking about. All right, family. Well, we thank all of you for staying on tonight. We have extended our dialogue somewhat, but certainly it was worthwhile. And we're going to continue to, you know, have discussions like this because, you know, as has been said, you know, we cannot continue to push things underneath the rug. We cannot continue to allow things to just fester. We must get this out in the open and figure out how we're going to deal with it. So it has to start somewhere, and, you know, we feel very fortunate and blessed to have had the opportunity to help facilitate such a dialogue tonight. And there will be some others in the future. But again, we want to remind all of you who have been able to stay on our podcast that there is a conference coming up this weekend, starting June the 29th. We certainly believe that it is an excellent, excellent activity and program for folks to get some insight and information. There are many, many aspects of our cultures, of our being, and, you know, to understand and overstand some of that a bit more is only going to be beneficial to us all. So with that said, one more time, the website location, Iya? It is oyotunji.org, oyotunji.org.
All right, wonderful. And is there any other contact information, just in case someone can't get online? Is there a telephone number?
There is a telephone number, and for those that might be traveling through and need directions, our Office of Tourism number is 843-846-8900. And that's a source for information on what's going on in case you are not online, or as we said, you just don't have a GPS in your car and you want directions in. However you need, that's a good number, 843-846-8900.
Very good. And also, just for FYI, Where are you near? Because the particular location that I saw, I wasn't familiar with it. So is there like another location? I don't know if it's Charleston or Beaufort or...
Right. Well, the quickest thing to say is everyone is familiar with I-95 because it goes from New York to Miami. And so we are nearest to exit 33 off of I-95. That would be the quickest way. And when you get off of the exit of 33, then you're going to be moving north on Highway 1721 as if you were moving toward Beaufort, but you won't even get close because we're not even 10 to 15 minutes from that particular exit off of I-95, but if people want to kind of look for it in the map, it's 45 minutes in from Hilton Head, it's 45 minutes south of Charleston, it's 45 minutes north of Savannah. So that kind of pinpoints where we are. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if someone was flying, they would look at Charleston or Savannah?
Savannah, right, exactly.
Okay, got you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. That answered a couple of questions that we had on this end. Okay, well, again, we thank all of you for, staying in tune and in touch on this program for tonight, and, of course, those who continue to tune in every week. We've been talking about the upcoming Pan-African Grassroots Conference that's going to take place this weekend. We, of course, have been talking with two dynamite representatives and officials of the Oyatunji Village. We've been, of course, just speaking with our sister Iya Ebum and, of course, His Majesty, who is Oba Adesumi II. I want to thank both of you for, again, taking the time to hang in there with us tonight and certainly to allow us to have this dialogue.
Okay, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Oh, it's a pleasure, and we look forward to having you back again soon.
Okay.
Take care. Odabo.
All righty.
Odabo.
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 To you all, family, we thank you again. And remember, we leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'a and Hotep. But remember, there can be no true Hotep, which means peace, unless there is indeed Ma'at, which of course means justice. So until next week or whenever we touch base again, remember the struggle does indeed continue, a luta continua, but also remember, promote you to the shinda. Together we shall win. Ma'at Hotep.